Welcome into the Talking Tide podcast on Ryer on YouTube. I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, joined as always by Travis Ryer. Be sure to give Ryer on YouTube a like and a subscribe. You can jump in here on the podcast with some comments as well. A lot to comment on, Travis. Coming out of Saturday afternoon in Nashville, Alabama, in stunning fashion, upended by the Vanderbilt Commodores. Final score, 40-35. First loss of the season for the Crimson Tide. First loss of the Kalen DeBoer era. And first SEC loss. It was ugly, especially on the defensive side of the ball. Historically speaking, first time Alabama's lost to Vanderbilt in 40 years. Last time it happened, Ray Perkins fell to the Commodores 30-21 in 1984. I don't know if they ran off with the goalpost 40 years ago, Travis, but they ran off with it in Nashville and dumped it in the Cumberland River.
Wow. What a night. I mean, that's a march too. When you think about the West End where Vanderbilt is all the way to the Cumberland River.
Yeah.
That's some grit and determination by the Vanderbilt.
Probably some tag team work, right? Somebody gets exhausted and hands it off.
Kind of like a relay. That's a big baton, you know, you're passing off there. It's a little bit different. But give Vanderbilt a lot of credit. I know this is an Alabama show, so we're going to talk about everything that went wrong from the Alabama perspective. But, boy, Vanderbilt was prepared. Vanderbilt has a cold-blooded killer at the quarterback position who I've been on record as being a huge fan of, Diego Pavia, before Saturday afternoon. And, you know, everything that needed to happen for Vanderbilt to do what it did. And Vanderbilt deserves credit for probably a lot more of that than we're going to give it here on the show tonight.
They played a super game. They beat Alabama head up, never trailed for a second in this game. So it's not one that anybody could say Alabama let get away. Vanderbilt handled its business on both sides of the ball throughout the afternoon, shoved it right down Alabama's throat for a 7-0 lead on the opening possession. And then, of course, a pick six thereafter to quickly open a double-digit lead. And I don't think Alabama fans were concerned even then at 13-0 because you still had 3.5 quarters to go. But Vanderbilt just kept plugging away. And every time throughout the game, every time Alabama made a move to get one step behind, they were never a step ahead. But every time Alabama made a play offensively to get one step behind Vanderbilt, Vanderbilt turned around and responded with a play to get two steps back ahead.
It was chase mode. Defensively, it was chase mode a lot for Alabama defenders. But where the score was concerned, you're right. At 13-0, Alabama goes right down, cuts it to 13-7. All right, go out there, get a stop, and then take control of this game. But you had the double number twos on the punt, and that gave, you know, essentially a turnover. That was another turnover for Alabama in the game. And Pavia and that offense took advantage of it. And then at 20-7, yeah, that's when it felt like it was a 13 or 9-point type of game for the rest of the way until, you know, it was such a relief just for this Alabama defense to force a red zone field goal there, right? In the, I guess it was the fourth quarter. And now you're really set up in a good spot to go down and take the lead. Maybe you go for two. If you get in the end zone, you go up three, and then you give up the strip sack right out there near midfield. And that's when it really felt like, you know, can you trust this defense to just get off the field here, get a three and out? Because it just really never happened all day.
Yeah, Vanderbilt's punter punted twice the whole afternoon. That's it. They were 12 out of 18 on third down. They give up the fourth down conversion by penalty that you noted. I wrote about that in both of my columns, not just one.
Huge.
It was absolutely huge. I asked Kalen DeBoer about it after the game, and I got what I felt was pretty much a non-answer. I mean, he said communication was the issue. Of course, we know that. But, yeah, two number twos on the field at the same time. Couple of old school fans that I heard from said, I got a way to solve that. There's 99 numbers and 85 players. You know?
The boys don't like to hear that real good, though, with those numbers. But
no.
Oh, it's still something you should absolutely be able to avoid. But, you know, you had a mix there. You had a special team situation, but you largely had your defense still on the field because I talked about this on Aftermath here on the channel last night. You were in punt safe because of where the ball was on the field, the down and distance. I think it was 4th and 4. So you left pretty much your defense out there, Xavien Brown being one of your corners. And then you bring in Ryan Williams as your returner. But even then, as much as Alabama rotates corners during the course of a game, you can lose track of it from that perspective. But you got a special teams coordinator type who's on the field. You know, those things just can't happen. Absolutely cannot happen. So, again, attention to detail throughout the game was a problem for Alabama, whether it was eye discipline or assignment responsibilities against a triple option like offense on defense, whether it was a situation with the double numbers on the punt. You know, you just weren't. You weren't good enough in the areas of details or fundamentally, you know, didn't really have situations where you saw Alabama defensively stone people. And you know why? Because you're never really in position to do it. And does that go back to the plan? Does that go back? I think there's ownership that everyone involved can take, because even when the scheme was sound, guys still didn't make plays, fundamental plays, like they should have.
Yeah, the option ate Alabama up, really. And if you look at the numbers, I think Vanderbilt ran for 160-some yards. That's not a huge number, but it was a very effective one.
Situational running, right?
Yeah.
When they needed to run it, right?
Yeah. And the usually when the triple option breaks a defense, it's the pitch man that does all the damage. That wasn't the case in this game. What did Alabama in was the dive and the keeper mostly, right? They hit a couple of shovel passes, that's like an inside pitch man, right? And right. Those shovel passes were big chunk gains. I mean, I'm going to guess they had what, Travis? 70,
Ruff- probably 70, 75 yards on the two shovels. And,
yeah.
You know, the first one, Vanderbilt was just trying to see if you were anywhere near awake with that first one near the end of the half, just trying to maybe steal something, right? Because
right.
Alabama's got the ball coming out to start the third. So let's take a shot with this safe play, gets knocked down. It's an incomplete pass. It was smart and it busted it. And then Alabama late in the half is in desperation mode on defense just to get to the locker room there at 23 yeah. to 14. And when that happened, I said to myself that's coming back around. That was so effective, like Florida running it against Alabama in the 2008 SEC championship game. That one's coming back around at some point in the second half. And when they went back to it, popped it big again.
It was there all over.
Eli Stowers, you had to know number 9 is Diego's dude, right? I mean, going back to New Mexico State, you know, they were a duo out there in Las Cruces. So, and maybe it was preached. We're not at practice. We're not in meetings. We don't know. But whatever went on in Tuscaloosa last week, other than the afterglow of the Georgia win, it just didn't seem like a lot took, which is interesting because offensively, Alabama, for a large part of the game, still looked sharp. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. There wasn't like this sluggish performance. They were still dynamic. They were still, you know, scoring points, 35 points in 18 minutes of possession. I thought the run game would be more effective traditionally with the backs, Chase. I thought they would be able to line up and just move Vanderbilt. That didn't really happen. The numbers look pretty good for Jam and Justice, but, you know, Jam hit a big one and that helped. But you know, just not good enough really in any facet.
Not good enough. Vanderbilt ends up with 42 plus minutes of time of possession. I think it was just a week ago or less than a week ago that Kalen DeBoer kind of in a news conference kind of downplayed the importance of time of possession. And I get it. Well, in most games, time of possession is a non-factor. But in that one, it was because Alabama's defense was beaten and fatigued by the end of that football game. Oh, if you go back and look at that last drive that Vanderbilt was able to bleed out the clock on, Travis, Alabama didn't even get Vanderbilt to a third down on that last drive. And I wrote it down.
Right. It wasn't all Pavia being a hero. He didn't have to at that point. It was the back hurting Alabama. And the backs hurt Alabama throughout the game. Alexander hurt Alabama. You can talk about his stat line and whatever, 3 yards per carry. But like we talked about earlier, boy, it seemed like when they needed that, when they needed something from him in the ground game, and it is a triple option offense, so I get it from a preparation standpoint. But some of the base plays are plays Alabama runs, right? Mm-hmm. They run zone and zone read, zone keep. And as you said earlier, there were too many times where, because of how you got conflicted with your defender on the edge there, you know, some of these alleyways were bigger than they should have been.
And right through the
shoot. These are plays we see Alabama run offensively. So you can't say it's a concept that Alabama defensively hadn't seen, because they see it on a weekly basis and from their own offense.
They do. And by the end, Vanderbilt, I mean, I didn't see the stop. I didn't think Alabama had a stop in it when that drive began. And Tim Keenan and Jihad Campbell got a TFL on the very first play to set up a second and 12. When that happened, I'm like, all right, maybe they're in business. Nope. They come right back. They hit it on second down, Travis. Vanderbilt, they probably really only needed 2 first downs on that drive to bleed out the clock. They ended up getting 3, but they got 3 first downs on that last drive, Travis, converting on second and 12, first and 10, and second and 7.
Yeah,
that's a beaten defense.
Yeah, it is. It was beaten in more than one way too. They'd had enough, I think, of dealing with that offense in general. And what did you think there late in the game when Bama cut it to 5 and there's less than 3 minutes to go? You've got the 3 timeouts. You got the 2-minute warning now. What did you think about onside kick versus kicking the ball down the field?
You know, I'm not going to criticize Alabama for not going for the onside kick. I wouldn't have criticized them if they had gone for the onside kick. You're going to need – if you go with the onside kick and you don't get it, you got to have a stop right now anyway. Mm-hmm. And if you give up a couple of first downs, well, yeah, maybe Vanderbilt's in field goal range. But if they get a couple of first downs, they can sit on it anyway. So, if I had been Kalen DeBoer, I probably would have gone for the onside kick for the reasons I just described. I didn't think Alabama had a stop left in it defensively. And so if that's what you're thinking, then yeah, go for the onside kick. But I'm not going to criticize DeBoer for not going for the onside kick, because I think there's some logic to kicking as well.
Well, and as you said, you had him second and 12. After kicking it down there.
Right.
So it was set up for you to take care of business. But give Tim Beck, man, the Vanderbilt offensive coordinator, he was a step or two ahead all night long. And it was essentially an extended handoff on the second and 12. But they got the matchups they want. And again, Alabama in chase mode on a really simple little throw out to the right flat. And that was... You know, that was largely the ball game at that point. Yeah, I can see it from the perspective of thinking, well, you know, we haven't stopped them all day, but at the end of the damn day, we are Alabama. You know, we should be able to get a stop. And also, one of the big things why I'm not a big onside kicks aren't what they were 10 years ago, right? When you'd load everybody up to one side and hit that high hopper and just eliminate people on the front line for the receiving team and have a pretty legitimate shot at recovering one of those. That being said, perhaps though, still at that point, I might've taken my chances, but if I'm being totally honest, I wasn't strong either way on it either way. But you're right. I mean, it looks bad now, certainly in hindsight, but going back to the first play of that possession, you get exactly what you need on first down, and that's a TFL from Keenan and Campbell, and then you immediately give it up on second down. You didn't even force like a third and four.
No.
You gave it up on second and 12. So, yeah.
And then on first and 10.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, at that point,
that's when frustration started setting in.
Well, Malachi. I mean,
yeah.
Because Malachi was kind of the guy on the second and 12, if I recall correctly, in the flat, or it looked that way. Maybe somebody else busted it and he got put in a tough spot. I don't know the coverage or the calls, but he was in the middle of that.
Right.
And boy, from that point forward, you talk about frustration. That's going to be an interesting sort of fallout in the days to come, too, to see how that plays out. I know that Kalen addressed it in his post, but he didn't seem all that aware of maybe everything that had gone on. But I'm sure there's been plenty of talk about that here in the last few hours or days.
Yeah, Malachi Moore wanted a 15-yard penalty, clearly. I mean,
like a manager in baseball, you know, trying to get thrown out.
He went Earl Weaver.
He did.
He went Earl, you know.
Billy Martin, yeah.
Slings the mouthpiece. Got an extra shot on Diego Pavia on that last first down that really broke. That could have been 15.
Yeah,
easy. And then he kicks the ball. And then you had the probably the worst of all is what appeared, at least, you know, and again, as you frequently point out, we're not on the field. We don't know everything that's said. And you can't always assume that what you see on the TV copy is what you think you're seeing.
Right.
But it sure looked like he refused to come out for a substitution with Cain Womack. And if that's the case, to me, that's a bigger issue than the mouthpiece or kicking the football or any of that.
And that's a all eyes on Kalen DeBoer situation early in his tenure, too, you know. Yeah, the guy's a captain. Yeah, he's been around. But how are you going to handle this situation? Everybody's looking at you now
right.
to see how you deal with it. And that adds to the importance because everything's been great to this point. It's been nothing but blue skies and positivity. Mm-hmm. Now adversity hits, and that's when your players, people in the program, they're going to really look to you, not just fans. I mean, obviously what we do fans now, it's like, all right, let's see what this team, let's see how they respond to DeBoer in this situation. And really for DeBoer as a head coach, it's not a situation he's all that familiar with because he's won a ton of games.
Right.
But with that specific scenario that we saw unfold in Nashville late, it's important that it doesn't mean you have to suspend the guy or anything like that, but is there a sense that you're strong in the message that whatever it is that you send to a veteran like Malachi Moore?
Yeah, I got the impression in the post that DeBoer was aware of the kick football on the spot that was a 15-yard penalty. Did not at all get the sense that he was aware about the attempted Bray Hubbard substitution, again, I think that's the biggest issue of all. If that's what happened, not that the game was on the line, it was over, but still, something that probably has to be addressed as much or more than anything else. And the fact that Malachi Moore is a captain to me makes it worse, not better, right? I mean, if we're talking about Xavier Brown losing his mind the last three plays of the game, and Malachi Moore checks him, completely different look.
Right.
When it's a captain who doesn't get checked at all, yeah, you're right. That puts eyes on the staff.
It does. And let me ask you this, sticking with the defense, I mean, what's your biggest concern with this group right now? I mean, can't get off the field on third down, but some of these third downs are very manageable because of some early down success that in large part to me goes back to the run game.
We
went into this season though thinking this front seven, if we know anything or we think we know anything about this Alabama defense, it's that it's going to be fine against the run.
Right.
And I know you can look at the Georgia game and say, well, you know, Georgia ran for what, 80 yards. Georgia got down 28-0 in the first quarter. You know, mm-hmm. you took Georgia completely out of what it wanted to be in that game, and you still had to hang on for dear life because Georgia, once it ramped up the explosive plays throwing it, you had a real problem. But to me, that's the biggest head scratcher here. It just, it hasn't been this stout sort of force against the run that I anticipated it being. You think it's concept, scheme, personnel, combination? Yeah. I still don't know what to make of this scheme that we see. And it's not because I know enough about it. I've said this pretty consistently. I'm still waiting to see exactly what the plan is here.
Right. Yeah, there's no question that the issue on defense is stopping the run. Alabama went into this game against Vanderbilt actually one of the better teams in the country in third down defense, but one of the worst in the country in fourth down conversions. And the reason for that is because even though they'd gotten third down stops pretty consistently, and Kane Womack mentioned this a couple weeks ago, I want to say coming out of the Wisconsin game, maybe the USF game it was, but he said, look, yeah, we got third down stops, but we also gave up so much yardage. We also let people get so close to the sticks on third down that we set them up with fourth and ones, fourth and twos, and we can't do that because, you know, they turn around and punch it over and move the stick. Doesn't matter if you move the chains on third or fourth down. If you move them, you move them.
Right.
And Alabama struggled mightily on third down against Vanderbilt, 12 out of 18. Yeah, from a scheme perspective, Travis, I do think that one of the things that made Alabama so good against the run in the Saban defense was they had a couple of DTs on the field who scheme-wise were controlling two gaps, right?
Two gapping, yeah.
Get your hands on somebody. You throw them to the left or you throw them to the right, but you control either side. When you do that and you're not getting moved off the ball, it allows those linebackers to scrape and be yep. so much more effective.
Yep.
So, you know, to me that's what I'm seeing that's missing.
And especially an offense like Vanderbilt's, they love you to take chances or, you know, jump gaps or slant, do things like that, because boy, when they catch you, it really, really hurts. And if you don't keep your eyes in the right places, regardless of the scheme, you're going to have a lot of problems on that side of the ball. So yeah, that's just been the biggest surprise for me. And it kind of, we had a comment here in the chat a minute ago. It was like, don't you remember the 8A game? I mean, they gave it up in the 8A game, but that's kind of you got the sense, or at least it was sold this way, maybe as, well, it's just, you know, and it was just a spring game, and maybe it was more thud than full on, you know, contact and squaring up people and taking them to the ground and all those things. But they haven't been especially stout in some one-on-one situations. I think that's where you miss a guy like Justin Jefferson here of late too. The thing about Justin Jefferson is he may not always be right, but when he is, you're going to be really, really wrong if you're on the other side. He is one of these guys that will stone you and will do it with emphasis and enthusiasm. And I think Jahad Campbell and Deontay Lawson are really good linebackers. But having that third guy that's a little bit different for different weeks and different matchups, that can be beneficial too.
It can. I can remember, Travis, watching Josh Chapman at times at Alabama back, and this was like pre-RPO era, where when he would get single blocked, he would reach out with a paw and grab a guard who's trying to get to a linebacker and hang on and basically force a double team when the offense didn't even want to double team him. You know, that kind of stuff. I mean, that's team defense right there. You know, that's really not what this Womack defense looks like right now. Adjustments, I'm sure, can be made. Womack has said over and over again that we can do anything we want in this defense. We just got to make some tweaks. Well, you got some tweaks to make for sure coming out of this one.
You got tweaks and you ain't got weeks. because it's got to happen on the fly. This ain't spring, right. You know. No. So you got to get it, got to get figured out. And I do think, obviously, against Vandy, they felt like they really only had two inside linebackers they could play. And you think about the time that the defense was out there and everything that was on Deontay and Jihad Campbell's plate against that kind of offense.
Yeah.
Ultimately, you're gonna start to feel the effects at some point. I think we saw that with those two guys. And that's where not having a guy that you obviously trust in Justin Jefferson, it wasn't a good day for that to happen. That being said, I understand it's Vanderbilt. I will, again, counter that with Diego Pavia is not Kyle Shurmur. Okay. You can just throw the blanket. Well, it's Vanderbilt. Well, you know, Diego Pavia is a legit dude in that offense, especially. And yeah. Vandy was coming off the off week. I don't give Alabama really a break for that in terms of prep, because as we know, these support staffs are of a size now where you've got people working on Tennessee already in terms of game plan or prep or scout, you know, for Alabama right now. So I don't buy that either, but you do have to give Vanderbilt a lot of credit.
We spent a whole bunch of time here on this edition of Pod, rightfully so, talking to Alabama defense. Travis, let's touch a little bit more on that Alabama offense before we jump to some scores around the SEC here on the Ryer on YouTube channel. Jalen Milroe, Travis, 18 out of 24 on the day. One touchdown, one pick. He took responsibility for that pick. I asked him about that. He said, look, my progression should have taken me to a different receiver, even though that pass was – I didn't think it was on him, obviously. It gets popped up in the air like that, fell right into somebody's arms. By the way, Alabama native made the play there, didn't make the interception but broke it up to Ricky Bright. He's from Gadsden.
Yep.
Came right through Ryan Williams. In real time, I thought he came through a little early, and I kind of thought I was going to see a flag for him coming through Ryan Williams early on that play. It never got thrown. When I looked back at it again, I thought it was more borderline and not so obvious. But Milroe played well, Travis. I know he had the sack fumble. That was huge. Got hit from the blind side on a whiff by Elijah Pritchett, who didn't have the best game in the world pass protection wise at right tackle. But one thing we didn't see a lot of, a little but not a lot of, is design runs for Milroe. That was so successful against Georgia, but I didn't get the sense that Milroe was a significant Milroe's running skills were really a significant part of the game plan. What about it?
I think the staff went into it thinking like I thought last week. You know, they saw the Missouri tape of the Vanderbilt defense giving up 200 essentially to Nate Noel on just straight zone runs. I mean, nothing fancy.
Yeah.
Against Vanderbilt a couple weeks ago in Como, and figured this is going to be a point where we'd like to get the backs more involved, Haynes and Miller, and we're going to be able to do that. And they did get a combined 11 carries. Jalen had 7, but 2 of those were sacks. So he really only ran the football 5 times in the game. You only had 46 plays.
Yeah. And how many of those 5 were scrambles rather than designed, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah. I would say of the 5, maybe 2 were true design runs. And 1 was the 1 touchdown run that he had
right
there in the red zone with the kind of buck quarterback sweep with the pullers out in front of him. But I think Alabama went into the game offensively in the run game thinking, yeah, we can really get behind our backs this week. And it really didn't happen. Like I said, Jam had the 1 explosive run, you know, Justice 6 for 23, Jam 5 for 45. So when you total them up, 11 for 68, that's 6 yards per carry. That's not terrible. But you didn't really get the explosives from Jalen either. I mean, he had a long run of 14 yards in the game relative to what he's been doing. You know, that's a stat line you will absolutely take if you're Vanderbilt. You get Jam Miller, Justice Haynes, and Milroe combined 18 carries for 78 yards.
You're loving it.
That's ask Georgia if Georgia would have taken that last week, especially with Jalen Milroe. I'm at the point where I know there's a lot of talk about, well, you got to run the backs more, you got to control the game more. Look, this is a quarterback-centric offense. and most of them are in college football these days. And so when the game starts to get away from you a little bit, best laid plans go to waste. And I'm of the belief that I don't care who runs the football as long as you're running it well. And Alabama didn't run it especially well in the game on Saturday, but Jalen throwing it 19 of 25, 312. Yeah, I mean, I appreciate him taking ownership in the interception, maybe more so because it wasn't the right, it wasn't the perfect guy to go to. But I'm like you, it was a bad break. I mean, that deflection is, you can't draw it up any better for a team that's a 23-point underdog. So, I thought Jalen was fine.
Again, might as well have caught that interception with a butterfly net.
That's what I mean. It was third down conversions. Special teams with the snafu on the penalty there. And even when you had an opportunity to flip the field and you got James Burnup out there, he hits like a 40-yarder. And it wasn't a shank, right? But you're thinking, this guy's got the potential to really put Vandy in the hole here. And it didn't really happen there. It just, it wasn't good enough, really, in any area.
Alabama falls 42-35. Up next, the South Carolina Gamecocks at home, Travis. And we will jump around the SEC for the last couple minutes of the program, as we always do. What about the Tennessee Volunteers? They got upset as well. We'll start right there, Travis. Arkansas gets it done 19-14, a comeback win. They were down 14-10 at the end of three quarters at home, and they managed to spring 9 fourth quarter points on Tennessee to come away with a big win. Taylen Green, 266 yards passing, and a lot of consternation about the way that game ended with Aimaleva running out of bounds with that last play. He ended up throwing for 158. But Tennessee, which was starting to look, I don't want to say invincible, but if Arkansas could beat them, other people can beat them. We know that.
Yeah. I mean, that was shocking to me. As much as anything, the 3-0 score at the half. Because I like Travis Williams as a defensive coordinator. I think he's about to make a lot of money, a lot more money. But Nico was not, didn't seem into it even, right? Yeah. I mean, even when he had guys open, he was missing pretty open guys. And then the decision there at the end of the game, you hit the explosive play to, you let Arkansas score, right, to take the lead. It's 14-13. I know Arkansas could have kicked a field goal if they needed to down there, but you let them take more than a field goal lead to get the ball back with a minute 17. You get the explosive play you need to get down there. And then from there, it just goes off the rails. And boy, that was big for Sam Pittman, no doubt about it. And you just worry for Arkansas. Taylen Green left that game. He took a bad shot to his knee. Tried to come back, but Singleton came in, did a nice job on that deciding drive to get Arkansas into the end zone. But yeah, that was not as much of a shocker as Vandy beating Alabama. But I think Tennessee was like a 13-point road favorite in that game.
Texas A&M, Travis, absolutely obliterates Missouri. Missouri had come in unbeaten. Texas A&M now 3-0 in the league. And 5-1 overall. Those three SEC wins are more than any other team in the league has right now. They're at the top of the standings. Missouri exposed here or what?
Yes. And look, everybody can wring their hands about Alabama losing to Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt should have beat Missouri 2 weeks earlier in Como. Okay. The kicker for Vanderbilt went 3 of 6 on field goals in an overtime loss against a top 10 team. But, yeah, I do think that was a revelation of Missouri of the kind that they would rather not prefer. But give Texas A&M credit. Connor Wigman back in there at the quarterback position. I thought they would stay with Marcel Reed, but they went back to the gunslinger, and he slang it. And also, Le'Veon Moss, the balance with that A&M offense, I thought was really impressive on Saturday.
Auburn goes down 31-13 to the Georgia Bulldogs. That one was in Athens. More struggles, obviously, for that Auburn offense, and Hugh Freeze with no answers, of course, once again at the end of that one. Ole Miss rebounds from that loss to Kentucky last week and handles its business quite easily on the road at Williams-Brice, 27-3 over Alabama's next opponent in the South Carolina Gamecocks.
Yeah, it wasn't a great weekend for road favorites in the SEC.
No.
But give Lane and his folks credit, because that was a, at the time, very debilitating loss, crushing loss to Kentucky at home, but then to go on the road. South Carolina, I can't really figure out. You know, that's a team that can go on the road and hammer Kentucky, play LSU in a tight game at home and lose, and then just really not show up yesterday against Ole Miss. I know that Shane Beamer was just, he was vexed, I guess you could say, in the post game. And now South Carolina, as you said, makes the trip to Tuscaloosa. So who knows? I do know this. South Carolina is watching the Vanderbilt tape and has a couple of quarterbacks that can run it. I don't think they can throw it as accurately as Diego. But hey, if you're looking to maybe cheer yourself up a little bit, you know that the team just before you did it, maybe that's not the best thing, because it shouldn't be hard for Kalen DeBoer to get his guys to buy in this week. Or if that was an issue last week, engagement should be at a high level after that loss.
Not a great offensive line at South Carolina either. So we'll see if that's an issue. Ole Miss got its business handled with a ton of injuries. Ole Miss probably had 9 or 10 guys out for that game against South Carolina. The pass rusher that they got as a transfer from Florida was out. Had a lot of guys sit that one out. They still get it done 27-3. Yeah. So Ole Miss looking pretty good right now, despite that loss to Kentucky. That's going to do it for this edition of the Talking Tide podcast on the Ryer on YouTube channel. For Travis Ryer, I'm Chase Goodbread, sports columnist with the Tuscaloosa News, and we'll talk to you next time right here on Talking Tide.